ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 5, Chapter 11, Text 17, Translation and Commentary by His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. Bratrivyam enam tadadabhravirayam. Upekshayadhyedhitam apramattaha. Gurur Harish Charano Pasanastro. Jahivyali Kang Swayam Atma Mosham. This uncontrolled mind is the greatest enemy of the living entity. If one neglects it or gives it a chance, it will grow more and more powerful and will become victorious. Although it is not factual, it is very strong. It covers the constitutional position of the soul. O King, please try to conquer this mind by the weapon of service to the lotus feet of the spiritual master and of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Do this with great care. Srila Prabhupada's commentary. There is one easy weapon with which the mind can be conquered: neglect. The mind is always telling us to do this or that. Therefore, we should be very expert in disobeying the mind's orders. Gradually, the mind should be trained to obey the orders of the soul. It is not that one should obey the orders of the mind. Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur used to say that to control the mind, one should beat it with shoes many times just after awakening and again before going to sleep. In this way, one can control the mind. This is the instruction of all the Shastras. If one does not do so, one is doomed to follow the dictations of the mind. Another bona fide process is to abide strictly by the orders of the spiritual master and engage in the Lord's service. Then the mind will be automatically controlled. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has instructed Srila Rupa Goswami, Brahmanda Brahmite Kono Bhagyavan Jeev Guru Krishna Prasade Pai Bhakti Lata Bij. When one receives the seed of devotional service by the mercy of Guru and Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, one's real life begins. If one abides by the orders of the spiritual master, by the grace of Krishna, he is freed from service to the mind. Sometimes we hear that the senses are our enemies. Sometimes we hear that lust is the enemy. Same word is used in Bhagavad Gita. Jahi Shatram Mahabaho. Conquer the Jahi. The same word as is used is here. Conquer. Imperative. Conquer. That there Krishna uses the word in relation to lust. Kama rupa durasadam, knowing that this enemy in the form of lust, one should conquer it. And here the discussion is about the mind, how to conquer the mind. So who is the enemy? Difficult to track down. If you can't see if you're not sure who your enemy is, then we're in big trouble, because you may be stabbed in the back at any time if you can't see clearly. No, actually, the enemy is ourself. Who is the enemy? We have seen the enemy, and it is ourself. Quote from Pogo cartoon strip. Sent to me by a revered godbrother, so got purified on the way. We are our own enemy if we do not surrender to Krishna. And we are our best friend if we do surrender to Krishna. The mind is the best friend of the living being and can be the worst enemy. So decisions, sankalpa, vikalpa, to accept or not to accept, are on the mental platform. So that mental platform becomes purified if we have the intelligence to understand that we should surrender to Krishna. There's an apparent contradiction between the statement in the translation and in the purport. We are warned in the translation, if one neglects it, the uncontrolled mind, or gives it a chance, it will grow more and more powerful and it will become victorious. So don't, it's said here, don't neglect the mind. If we neglect the mind and just let it run rampant, then we'll be overcome by the mind. But then in the purport, we find out that one easy way to conquer the mind is to neglect it. So it seems like a contradiction, doesn't it? Well, one should not neglect to neglect the mind. If we neglect the uncontrolled mind and just let it run rampantly uncontrolled, then we're in trouble. But if we recognize that the mind is uncontrolled and just neglect its orders, then we're not in trouble. So it's not an inherent, it's not a contradiction, although it might seem to be. Now, here in this section of Bhagavatam, there's a lot of discussion on the nature of the mind. Jarabharat, who by his wrong decision, he in his previous life, two lives previously, because of his uncontrolled mind, he had to fall down into the animal species. When we say wrong decision, it's exactly this position. It wasn't really a decision. It wasn't that he decided, I'm going to become attached to a deer and forget about my devotional service to Krishna. He didn't make a decision like that. But he found he came across the deer, newly born deer. And he thought, I should look after the deer. And he didn't recognize. He neglected to control his mind. He should have known that now my mind, all he was in the forest for what? Meditation, tapasya, austerity to control the mind. He should have recognized that now my mind is going out of control. But he failed to do that. And gradually, he lost the whole thread of what he'd come to the forest for. And he just became attached to a deer, which is ridiculous. If you consider, he had all the opulence of the empire and the affection. He became affectionate to the deer. He had the affection of his wife, family, citizens. He gave all that up as Maya and became attached to a deer because of the uncontrolled mind. Therefore, one should not neglect the mind and just let it wander here and there, because the mind wanders and catches us and throws us into the material world, material consciousness. So one should be aware of the mind, and what the uncontrolled mind gives moment by moment all kinds of ridiculous propositions. Every one of them is ridiculous. Everything that Maya presents to us is ridiculous. So if we don't neglect that, then we get into trouble. And we see it's true. Just it's not something that we're talking about. The karmis, they're all in Maya. They don't know about Krishna consciousness. They have uncontrolled senses. But it's true of devotees also. And we say the same principle applies. Someone may be controlling their mind, acting in Krishna consciousness for many years, and then the same thing that happened to Jarabharat. They neglect to control the mind. They may think, now I have transcended all these lower injunctions. And they fall down, because they neglect to control the mind. It's very dangerous to think that, as Prabhupada mentions here in this section of the Bhagavatam, one should never trust the mind. Never trust. Don't say, now I am an advanced devotee, so I don't have to control the mind. Anyone who thinks like that, finished. It's not going to be gradual either. It's going to be quick. So, sadhu sabdhan, as they say in India. Be careful, sadhus. The sadhu should always be very careful, because kshurasya dhara nishita duratyaya. The path of spiritual life is sharp like a razor. We can cut ourselves very easily. So we should also be very sharp. Not dull. Dull means tamagun. Dullness means we're overcome by ignorance. So devotees should be always alert, because the uncontrolled mind can drag even someone as advanced as Jarabharat down into the animal birth, or even in this life into animal-like existence, as we've seen. Greater souls than us have been dragged down to animal-like existence because they neglected the basic instruction to control the mind, which is very difficult. It's very difficult to control the mind, but there is one easy way to do so, which is to neglect it. This is great psychology. This is the best psychology. The best psychology is no psychology. Because if we're thinking about the mind, this, that, and what shall I do? And mind's telling me this, and you know this, and in my previous life, and in this, I went to a hypnotic regressor, and he told me this, and in this life, in my childhood, this, that. It's like digging in the garbage heap. Wherever you go, you're only going to get garbage. It's like, you think you can sort it all out and get, but it's just stinking garbage. And however you sort it out, you can put it very neatly if you like in piles, but it still stinks. You can make all PhD thesis on, because someone in their childhood, someone made a face at them and therefore they have this syndrome and this and that, but still it's all just stinking garbage. So what do you do with stinking garbage? You just throw it out, that's all. Neglect it. Let someone else, it's not my business. We shouldn't have anything to do with that unless we're crows. Crows like stinking garbage. So the business of psychologists is the business of crows, to take pleasure in the stinking garbage. But any cultured person simply neglects it. Nothing, just some wild thought comes in my mind. They come in various varieties, as we all have experienced, from absolutely bizarre to, well, there's a scale from bizarre, more bizarre, absolutely bizarre, absurdly bizarre, and other things we don't even want to talk about. We'd be embarrassed. So any proposition of the mind other than to serve Krishna, which Maya never offers to us. Maya never says to us, now you should serve Krishna. She always has many other things to offer. They're all bizarre. You should become peaceful and happy in this world. Does that sound bizarre? It sounds like a very good proposition. But without Krishna, it's just madness to think that there can be any peace or happiness in this world. Kim sukham martya dhaminam, as we find repeatedly said in Bhagavatam. Where is the happiness in a place of death? Just like you're on death row, you're to be executed tomorrow morning, hung, drawn, and quartered, or whatever. So, and then you think, well, okay, so, anyway, so I can sit here peacefully and happily, and I'll just adjust the bed and have a nice sleep. Yavat jivet sukham jivet. As long as you're alive, live happily. But you're going to be tortured and killed the next morning. So, it's madness. And if someone comes and offers, actually there is a way you can escape from this. No, no, it's a very comfortable cell. It's very nice here. Is that not madness? Of course it's madness. But that's our position. We should be looking to find a way out. But instead, if we think, oh, it's so, see, I spent all my life just, I never had any nice, comfortable place to stay. This is very nice here in this cell. It's very peaceful and quiet, and no one disturbs me, and I have my own bed. Everything's so nice. It's just madness to think like that. So any proposition of the mind other than Bhajahure Mana Srinandanandana, other than worshipping Krishna, is total madness. So here in Bhagavatam and in Bhagavad Gita, we do have psychology. It's not that it's totally discounted. Transcendental psychology, which is totally different from mundane psychology, which is aimed at how to feel peaceful in the madhouse, or how to adjust oneself to be a normal madman. Not completely mad like everybody, but just, you can fit in them. You're living in the madhouse, and you're just mad in the normal way, not mad in an abnormal way. So that's psychology. That is mundane psychology. How to adjust the mind to be a cooperative and not overly belligerent madman. That is mundane psychology. And transcendental psychology is from a completely different perspective. That the mind is to be controlled. Not that we adjust the mind to try to live happily in this world. Therefore, people are interested in psychology, and some of our devotees, they like to dabble in that, and they read Teach Yourself Psychology in 21 days or something like this, and then they set themselves up as a psychology expert and give advice to others. And it's in the name of preaching. But we should know that all these Freud and Jung, Prabhupada said he was better than Freud, but they don't know what they're talking about, actually. They're also in Maya. So, psychology we can take from Bhagavad Gita. And having taken the analysis, we can understand that it's all garbage, and then you just leave it, that's all. The ultimate psychology is no psychology. Just, we don't have anything to do with it, that's all. Just, that means the mind proposes, okay, now I've had enough Krishna, I've done enough Krishna consciousness for this lifetime, as one of my gurus, some Babaji in Bengal, and that wasn't good enough for him. Then he went to Radha Kund, spent some time there, and then he came and lived with us for some time in Bangladesh and hung around the ashram. And then he said, oh, I've done enough Krishna consciousness for this lifetime, and went back to New York and never seen or heard of since. Don't even know if he's alive in this body. So the mind may propose that. But if we follow that proposal, Neha, what is that? Neha bhikkhu naśasti pratyavaya. I've done something, so you know, I'm svalpam apyasya dharmasya trayate mahatobhyat. I've done a little bhakti, so it's okay. No, I'm saved from the greatest fear. And, you know, there's always another chance, and Krishna looks after his devotees, and, you know, I have so many material desires, and really I should work them out. I have to experience the material world. Then only I could understand that it's miserable, as if we hadn't had millions of lifetimes already testing it out. So and if we start to think, yeah, well, how could I do it? Is that really practical? Yeah. My mother's still there, she'd give me an apartment, and, you know, well, getting older now, but I could put some cream on my face and look a little younger, and, and then tug of war goes on. There's no need for a tug of war. Just immediately the mind comes to the problem, finish, throw it off, turn it off. That's all. How are we to do that? To be absorbed in the mission of spreading Krishna consciousness, and automatically all these nonsense propositions will go away. If we're trying to find happiness in anything but serving the mission of Srila Prabhupada and the Acharyas, then our mind will have some other food to work, some other subject matter to deliberate on. But if we're if we just understand this principle, that it's in my own best interest to serve Krishna at every moment without deviation, then automatically when any other thought comes, then it's just rejected, that's all. Apuryamanam achala pratishtam samudram apa pravishanti asma tadvat kama yang pravishanti sarve sashantim apnoti nakama kami. Just like the rivers, they may keep on flowing. They do keep on flowing into the ocean. But the ocean is so great, it is not disturbed. So in the same way, material desires, they may keep on flowing, but a devotee remains peaceful because he's not, his mental state is bigger than that of a river. Just like the ocean is bigger than the river, it's not disturbed. So if a devotee has a bigger desire or a better desire than to enjoy this material world, then the desires for material enjoyment, they become insignificant. Sangsara bhashana mor kobi tuccha hobi. Narottam Das sings too, Nityananda Prabhu. Oh, he sings that when Nityananda Prabhu gives his mercy to me, then my material desires will become insignificant. Actually, they are insignificant, but our mistake is that we think they're significant. But Nityananda Prabhu, he is the preacher, he's the main preacher in Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he's the original preacher in Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's Sankirtan movement. So if we get his mercy, then our material desires will become insignificant. Doesn't mean they're just going to go away. They'll keep on coming. There's Maya's empowered to give us all kinds of propositions, one after the other, one after the other, non-stop. Even in the night when we're dreaming, she doesn't even stop. It comes in the dream comes, dong, 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 and then you have to, in the dream, you have to think, wait a minute. I'm supposed to be a servant of Prabhupada, this is all nonsense, and then like that. So even she doesn't stop, she's 24 hours busy. And she has many different ways of pulling us down. So instead of trying to find out, or just like in jiu-jitsu or something, you have to train and learn all the different moves but Maya's always got some new ones, so instead of trying to counteract, and she's better, she's got a lot of practice, and after all, she's the wife of Lord Shiva, so it's not a good idea to try to fight with Maya. But instead, if we just neglect, not even that, actually. No, don't try to insult Maya, because she is more powerful than us, but just neglect. Just like the girlfriend is calling, oh, I'm missing you so much. We could be, okay, put on your book bag and, go out the door. Just no communication. Someone's calling up on the phone. But just, okay, put the phone down and go on with your business. Just don't have anything to do with it. And then what can Maya do? But if you try to, well, actually, I really love you, but, and then, yes, well, maybe after some time, and then we get entangled. And the best thing is just cut out. Nothing to do. I have nothing to do with it. Understand that we have nothing to do with it. Often, devotee, we think that the mind is like another person. The Kamis don't think like that, do they? We don't hear Kamis thinking, well, my mind seems like another person, because they fully identify with the mind. They think, the mind, that's me speaking. Go and enjoy the world. Oh, yeah, well, Okay, well, there's no dialogue. There's not like they're trying to control the mind, but devotees see the mind almost as another person, because actually it's Maya speaking through the mind. It is another person, but that's not me. We should know when desires come, as if it's like, every few days or whatever. We should know that this is Maya speaking. It's not me. It's nothing to do with me. It's got absolutely nothing to do with me. I am Jiva Swarupai Krishna Nitya Das. I am an eternal servant of Krishna. So this is just some kind of some garbage going on in the background. It's got nothing to do with me. So why should I get involved in that at all? And that's it. Then the mind is conquered by neglect, and one can practice that. Especially if one has that higher taste of serving, if one has a mission in the service of the Lord, that we have something to do, just like Haridas Thakur. He had his vow to chant so many rounds every day. It's 3 times 64 rounds every day. And the prostitute came, that you just enjoy me. Okay, just sit down there, but I have to chant my rounds first. And the rounds went on all night, and then this morning, and then what's the prostitute? And then she went away. And this went on for 3 days. And he said, well, every day you say, I'll accept you, she said to him. But you know, you never finish your rounds on time, so how am I going to do that? And he said, well, I'm sorry, but I have to finish my rounds. And then by her hearing the chanting of Haridas, she realized what a miserable assignment she'd taken, and she surrendered to Haridas and became a devotee. And Haridas said, actually, I understood from you. I would have gone away the first day, but I just stayed for your sake, to purify you. Now you just stay here and chant Hare Krishna. But that's not recommended for everyone. I will purify these material desires. Okay, come in, and I'll purify you. No, that's not for everyone. Maya personally came to test Haridas. And same thing, she personally came to test him with feminine postures that would have bewildered the mind even of Lord Brahma, and Haridas was undisturbed. So he's the ideal. We can't imitate that. We're not going to go and... Haridas Thakur showed the ideal of how being absorbed in Krishna consciousness, that he conquered Maya. Not by fighting with Maya, exactly, but by ignoring her. She came as a prostitute, then she came personally. And both times, Haridas simply ignored, I've got something more important to do. So this is the very easy method to conquer the mind, which is otherwise, it may seem easier just to surrender to our mind and let the mind wander here and there and cultivate material desires, but the end result is that we don't attain Krishna. So to attain Krishna, the desires have to be purified. The mind has to go toward Krishna. The mind the mind's activity, sankalpa vikalpa, accepting and rejecting. So we just train the mind to accept Krishna. And we're not so advanced that just hearing the name of Krishna we swoon. Unfortunately, we're not so advanced. But we have our service to perform. We should all have service to perform. And that purifies us. As Prabhupada mentions in one purport in Bhagavad Gita, that in the beginning devotees, they get pleasure from performing the service. And later the service, which is non-different from Krishna, they take pleasure in that. And then later, they directly experience Krishna. So devotional service is non-different from Krishna. And if we're absorbed in devotional service, I have my service to do, then where's the question of acceding to the mind's demands? So it's a very simple process. This is the best psychology, no psychology. Just don't bother. The mind is proposing so many things, but sankalpa vikalpa. Once we enter into Maya, then we have so many different sankalpa vikalpa. Accept this, reject that, accept this, reject. When you accept one thing, then another whole set of propositions come, and we have to individually choose. Just like Maya gives a proposition, you should become a millionaire. And we accept, okay, I accept that. And then Maya sends another whole set of propositions. You could do it by being a bank robber. Okay, reject that, because I'll probably end up in prison. Or you could do it by selling illegally made brandy. And reject that also, because that's also not a good idea. I'll probably end up in prison. Or you could do it by selling flowers on the side of the road. Reject that also, because you're never going to become a millionaire. Okay, get into stocks and shares. Okay, that sounds good. All right, accept that one. Stocks and shares. Okay, now what about this company? And then, well, all right, let's put 30% in. And then it becomes so complicated. There's an unlimited set of acceptance and rejection. And that's called Maya Jal, the great net of Maya, which catches us. But at the beginning, Sankalpa Vikalpa, acceptance and rejection. Maya says this, reject. Prabhupada says this, accept. And very easy. Then you don't have to deal with it. We don't get caught in a whole web of Maya. Anukulyasya sankalpa. Pratikulyasya varjanam. We should accept that which is favorable for advancing in devotional service and reject that which is contrary to advancement in devotional service. And we have already so many rules are given in Shastra. Do this. What is favorable for bhakti? Do this. One should rise early in the morning. One should associate with devotees. One should chant the holy name. These are the do's. Okay, we should do all of that. And do not associate with non-devotees. Do not talk nonsense. Do not read literature which is against the principles of devotional service. There's so many do's and do nots, but in many situations, there's no specific rule to cover it, but we may make some decision. We may have to make some decision. In this circumstance, what is favorable for devotional service, what isn't? Many times we may ask the if it's a difficult decision. Some decisions are small decisions, like, shall I stay up late tonight? I've got a lot of extra work to do. Shall I stay up late or shall I put it off till the next morning? That's a relatively small decision. Could be, of course, it could have far-reaching effects, but say it's washing the pot. Should I put it off till the morning? No, don't put it off till the morning. Brahmins don't do that. But anyway, that's a relative. But then if it's a major decision, then that will affect the whole future course of our life, then we should consult others. Should I marry this person? Of course, in previous culture, those who are getting married, they didn't make that decision, which is unimaginable in modern society. They didn't decide who they're going to marry. It was decided for them. Probably in this country also. They didn't have any say in that. Okay, now you're marrying this one. Finished. There wasn't any divorce in those days. Funny, huh? So, they did, when they chose for themselves, now they choose for themselves and they get it all wrong. But, yeah, far-reaching decisions. Should I get married or not? Then one may consult seniors, gurus, who will give advice. In the modern age, we don't have these decisions made for us. So we have to decide for ourselves. So the guru is there, or gurus are there, seniors are there to help us. Of course, we should find good gurus. If we have a guru who himself is a disciple of Sigmund Freud, then we're in trouble. We should have a guru who is a disciple of Srila Prabhupada, and not in name only. And keep Prabhupada on the keep Prabhupada's picture somewhere in the home, and but our actual advice on how to live our life comes from all kinds of totally bogus people. Actually, bogus means totally bogus. You're either bogus or you're not, but you just say totally to emphasize it. So, this is the psychology process. It's, as Prabhupada often emphasized, it's actually very simple. Krishna consciousness is very simple. There's nothing very difficult about it at all. Life is complex, that we know. The very nature of life in this mature world is very complex. But we can, our way to steer through it is very simple. They had that Titanic boat, which they said was unsinkable. It sunk on the first voyage, as is famous. But we have an unsinkable boat, which is the mercy of Krishna, the instructions of Krishna. That is an unsinkable boat. It can go through all the worst storms. It can go through all whirlpools, giant sharks that only appear in the cinema, not in reality, you know, whatever. Whatever it is, this boat can cross over the ocean of material existence. Rideham adyam sulabam sudurlabam bhavansu kalpo guru karnataram. Maya, what is the verse? Mayanukulena nabhasfiteritam. Puman bhavabdim nataret saatnaha. Krishna says that this human body is like, it's a good boat for crossing the ocean of material existence. And the guru, if you get a proper guru, then he's a good captain. You have a good boat, but you need someone who knows how to guide it. And Krishna's instructions in Shastra, they're like favorable winds which blow us in the right direction. If the wind is blowing against us with a sailing boat, you can't sail. And there's also the doldrums in the South Atlantic. There's an area where if your ship goes in there, there's no wind ever. So if your ship goes in there, you're finished. You don't go anywhere. So we need a favorable wind, and the favorable winds are the instructions in Shastra. And Krishna concludes this analogy by saying that one who, despite having all these facilities, fails to cross the ocean of material existence is simply killing themselves, suiciding, committing suicide. So we have all facilities. Everyone here has knowledge of Krishna consciousness. Many of them have accepted gurus who are guiding them according to the instructions of Shastra. So, according to Krishna, who's always right, if we don't take this opportunity to cross the ocean of material existence, then we're simply killing ourselves. What an indictment, killing ourselves. So, what does it mean? We don't take advantage of all these facilities. Means that instead of listening to the captain, we think, hey, what are you talking about? I know better. That means we're listening to the mind. Prabhupada said this, but if Prabhupada was present here now, I could convince him that he was wrong. This is a pronouncement of one of, I'll talk about that this afternoon. One of Prabhupada's disciples says that he was wrong, but he was quite good, but I could convince him better. So we may think like that, or we may not be so bold, or we may just ignore the instructions of the guru. You're just sunbathing on the deck, and the guru says, "There's a storm coming." No, it's all very peaceful. It's nice sun. Has anyone been in Bengal in the month of Vaishakh? Boishakh, Boishakhi Jor means a storm in the month of Boishakh. So in the month of Boishakh, it's very hot all day, extremely hot. And then every 3 or 4 days, in the evening around 5 o'clock, it's very suddenly there's a huge storm. It just blows up and it's just hot, 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 hot. No, not even a blade of, nothing moves. The birds don't move. That it's too hot to fly anywhere. Everything's just still. And then all of a sudden, the wind starts to gently blow. Within 5 minutes, it's a massive storm with rain blowing everywhere, banana trees blowing down. If there's any cloth left out to dry, it's all blown away. If it's on the line, it may get ripped off. So it comes very quickly. We're not expecting it. So you may think, yeah, everything's nice, everything's peaceful. And then the storm comes very suddenly. And if you're not prepared, then it destroys everything. Who knows? Whose experience they can know. No, it's coming. They'll tell someone. I was in a village, and I put in that glimpses of traditional Indian life. But I was in a village, and it was hot like this. And there was just in the very, very distant rumbling sound of thunder. And this old man said, "Bolche ami aschi." He said, "I'm coming." And then immediately everyone ran around, brought in all the cloth that was drying, put in the calves, and there's like dal balls drying in the sun, just everything inside, and within five, there's a massive storm. So those who know, they can see a little, it may seem just a little rumbling in the distance, and still it's, the sun is shining, it's hot like anything. Those who know can see that it's coming. And those who know can see it's coming means it's always coming. Whenever there's, it seems nice, you can know, whenever everything seems nice, you can know that there's a big problem coming. There was in, maybe 10 or 12 years ago, there was an article in Newsweek magazine entitled, I can't remember what it's titled, but the subject was America's hegemony, or just the Soviet Union had collapsed and America was the one power in the world, and they were celebrating. They showed pictures of Coca-Cola in Pakistan and McDonald's in Shanghai, and it's it, we're on top of the world, nothing can touch us, it's great, we won the Cold War. And now look, just 15 years later, America's, the people have lost faith in the government, the economy is a wreck, they're embroiled in this war, that war, another war, and the future looks bleak. So it looked like they were on top of the world, and very soon they came down. That's Maya. That's the way Maya works. If we're in a very, if everything seems very nice, we should understand we're in a very, very dangerous position, because that niceness is Maya's trick to lull us. You know what the word lull means? It means just to make us feel complacent. Just like everything's very nice, no problem, and then smash, 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 smash. So never, never trust that we're in a good situation. Everything's good. Now I've been chanting Hare Krishna so long, and I'm an advanced devotee, and everyone says I'm an advanced devotee, and so I guess I must. Now I'm a guru, so that means I'm a paramahamsa, right? So I'm a sannyasi, so I'm beyond all material desire. Otherwise, and then as soon as anyone thinks like that, finished. Just, you can count the number of days, not even months or years. One of our great, powerful sannyasis said, "I am free from the desire for sense gratification." Within days, he was finished. I mean, he didn't even fall down with a beautiful woman. Maya was so humiliating to him. There are any number of young women who would, long to lick his lotus backside or whatever, but Maya humiliated him so much. Be careful. Take this decision. I must serve Krishna. And then just keep it simple like that. It's another idea of Maya. Okay, so now you've conquered me, so you should show everyone. Set a good example. Show how you've conquered Maya. Maya is very, very tricky. Now you have to set the example and show that now you're a big devotee. And listen, very dangerous. Very, very dangerous. So, yeah, this is good advice. Don't neglect the mind. Don't think I've conquered the mind, but always neglect the mind. What the mind says, just forget it. Unless we hear, serve Krishna, then we know that Maya is not speaking through the mind. Krishna himself is speaking. And the devotees, specifically, Guru is mentioned. Guru means the one who will always tell us, serve Krishna, serve Krishna. Well, I think I serve Krishna. Yes, but I serve Krishna. Yeah, I'm going to serve Krishna by becoming a multi-millionaire, and then I'll give some. I'm going to serve Krishna by becoming a famous rock star. Just the mind, that's all. The uncontrolled mind. Neglect it. Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna.
Any question or comment, please? Yes. Krishna consciousness is simple for the simple and difficult for the crooked.
I heard that he said this Krishna consciousness is simple but not easy.
Krishna consciousness is simple but not easy. I don't remember that. It sounds possible. But we should be careful also, because I regularly get people telling me Prabhupada said this, or they send it out in an email. Then I ask them, could you give the reference for that? Silence. Or was that someone sent me an email recently, and at the bottom he put that Srila Prabhupada said that material life is, what is it? Spiritual life is difficult, but material life is impossible. So I sent back an email saying, could you give me the reference for that? I don't remember ever hearing this before. No reply. So we should be a little careful. I'm not aware of that quote. If it may be. Or maybe it's a good statement, even if Srila Prabhupada didn't say it, actually. Even if Prabhupada didn't directly say it, it's a good quote. If Prabhupada did say it, all well and good, but that's a good point to consider. The Krishna consciousness is simple, but not easy. Yeah. If Bharat Maharaj had ignored the deer, would he not have been like a Mayavadi? And he would be insensitive, to use that.
No, he would not see this as everything is connected to
Krishna. Everything is connected to Krishna. Well, that's a very dangerous mentality, isn't it? Everything's connected to Krishna, so let me connect my tongue to this hunk of chicken. It's all Krishna. Or let me connect my arm to this beautiful woman's shoulders. She's also a representative of Krishna. It's an interesting situation, actually. I mean, how should we respond? That the deer is helpless, so shouldn't we do something to help? Just like, I am a devotee. Actually, we shouldn't think I'm a devotee, but we're trying to be devotees, and we see the classic example of an old woman trying to cross the road, and she's very timid. I don't think you find old women like that anymore. They're all dressed up with lipstick and all this kind of thing. But actually, we saw one just in the village just now, where they still exist. It's a take a photo while you can. It's a dying species. But there was a time when old women were like, you know, like old women, and if they cross the road and they can only walk very slowly and the cars are whizzing by, so the noble young man says, okay, madam, and boldly stands in the road and stops the traffic and walks the woman over the road. You can do this kind of thing as a devotee, but you don't spend all day and then you see there's 50 old women one after another. You don't spend all day doing it. So in the same way, there may be a deer. Okay, what to do? Should the deer got washed up? Oh, okay, do something to help. But then when you see if you're getting entangled, it's taking your whole time, and maybe say, well, you know, leave it to its fate. As that Sridhar Swami, or the commentator on the Bhagavatam, he was a young man, and his wife died in childbirth, in their first baby. So he thought, my wife died, okay, that's good, then I can take sannyas. But wait a minute, I got this baby. So what to do? Who will look after the baby? And then he saw, what was it? a lizard gave birth, the same thing, gave birth to a baby. I don't know how lizards come out of eggs, don't they? Anyway, whatever, there was a baby lizard and the mummy lizard experienced change of body. And then there was a baby lizard all by himself, helpless. And at that point, an insect just came and grabbed it. And Sridhar Swami thought that, well, Krishna's providing for everyone, so can provide for my baby also. Left the baby and took sannyas. So at some point, Jarabharat should have arrested his mind, arrested his thought processes and seen that now it's gone beyond my immediate duty. And my real duty is to serve Krishna, but I'm getting deviated from that. And it may mean, as in the case of Sridhar Swami, that you may have to appear hard-hearted. In Karnataka, very famous, is Raghavendra Swami, who also in youth, he left his young wife and took sannyas, who then committed suicide. Seems very hard-hearted, doesn't it? But the service he did in delivering the jivas was... He was a very, very powerful acharya. Ramanuja also, he didn't have children, but his wife was young. He left her, took sannyas. So, if one has the power to deliver so many jivas, then one may do so. Or even for the sake of delivering oneself. But we don't generally recommend it in the modern age because people are so fickle-minded. They take sannyas and then after 3 weeks said, well, I don't think I'm ready for this. Then don't take sannyas. Or they get married and they don't take responsibility. So we don't... Young sannyas for married men, we don't recommend that because people don't have the culture and the commitment. And even if someone does have that culture and commitment, then others may, who are not on that level, they may imitate that. So you have to wait a little time. You have a young child, so not for you now. So, yeah, please. You know a Sankirtan story which fits this very nicely, yeah?
Not long time ago, in Belgium, I said, two Sankirtan devotees were on the street.
Two Sankirtan devotees were on the street in Belgium. Oh, was that the stabbing case?
No,
there's another one.
There was a bank robbery.
There was a bank robbery.
The thieves were escaping by bikes.
Push bikes. The thieves are escaping on pedal bicycles. I didn't hear this story. One of them escaped.
And the other one escaped just passing by the Sankirtan devotee.
And one escaped passing just by the Sankirtan devotee. I'm repeating.
So he fell down from the bike.
The Sankirtan devotee pushed him so he fell down from the bike.
Before he could reach him. And then the man pulled out a gun and shot the devotee almost dead.
The robber shot the devotee almost dead at that point.
He got 6 bullets,
yeah.
And he got lifelong injuries. He survived.
He survived, but he's not a Sankirtan. He's not on Sankirtan anymore.
He's again Sankirtan. But of course.
Yeah, it's better not to. Yeah, how far, how much to get involved? It's like in the 9/11. That's a different example altogether. Yeah. Whether to get involved, not to get involved. And it's probably better devotees don't get involved. And I mean, there are cases where in Melbourne, I think it was, that the devotees were sewing the canopy for Rath Yatra and some women were trapped in a building on fire, and the devotees brought the canopy out, and the women jumped one after another into the canopy, which was used to save them. and they would have been burned to death otherwise. Of course, that's a no-risk thing because they weren't dealing with robbers or like that. So, yeah. I think even the police would say don't try to apprehend professional thieves. Let the police do their job. Yeah, you're going to say something, Tirtha Prabhu?
Maharaj, when you see this example of Jarabharat, there's some...
Oh, one other point about Jarabharat, which I meant to mention. Sorry to cut you out. I'll have you on in a second. Prabhupada commented that the reason he got deviated is because he hadn't accepted guidance from a spiritual master. He just went and did his own thing. He was Bharat Maharaj. Yeah. What is our hope?
Like, you know, whatever way you go, you stop one thinking, another comes, and even in the form of devotional service, many things are happening there.
Many things happen. It's a turbulent world. The turbulent world of ISKCON. Devotees are fighting about different things. Well, the compass is Srila Prabhupada's instructions. We should understand them very clearly. That's all. And we should discriminate also. We should discriminate. Leaders, who is a leader? Who's the authority to lead if they're following Prabhupada's instructions? If they're promoting something else, then they're a misleader, that's all. So we may respect them for their previous engagement in devotional service, but if they're recommending us to do something which is clearly different from what Prabhupada gave us, then they've deviated. We shouldn't be so naive to think that it happened dozens of times in the past and it can't happen now. Or rather, we should be aware that deviation is common and learn to recognize it when it appears so that we don't be victimized by it. Right? It's a simple thing to understand. As I mentioned a few years ago in a class in Zagreb, which had various consequences, that one should be known as a guru because he speaks the truth, not just because he's called a guru, that whatever he says is the truth. Right? That wasn't a very popular statement. Because devotees, they wanted to have a sentimental approach. They didn't want to have a shastric approach. They wanted to have an easy going, just someone tells you this is a guru, okay, he's a guru, and then just turn off your mind. And when it says to neglect the mind, it doesn't mean to turn, it means to neglect its wrong proposals. But it doesn't mean to become a zombie or a vegetable, not at all. Devotees should be the most intelligent people. That intelligence comes from understanding Shastra in the Parampara. So we shouldn't be, devotees should be very intelligent and immediately understand what is not Krishna consciousness. Otherwise, how are we going to discriminate? On what basis are we going to discriminate if we don't discriminate according to Guru, Sadhu and Shastra? Guru means follows his guru. That's all. Very simple thing. Very simple.
So what to do in that situation? You come to class and then you see the half class is okay, half class maybe not.
Half the class is okay and half the class is not okay. That means all the class is not okay.
And the person is guru.
That's what's called upper sampradayak. The upper sampradayas, they appear to be somewhat okay. The 13 upper sampradayas, among them, most of them recognize Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. They chant the holy names. They do a lot of things which are good. But for the wrong thing, they're condemned. The Gauranga Nagaris, they worship Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and Vishupriya very nicely, but they have the wrong idea that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is in the mood of enjoying the women of Nadia. It's a wrong idea. It's offensive to Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. They have great kirtan, They're really into Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, but everything seems nice, but they got that one thing wrong, and the one thing wrong, it's everything's wrong. It's a deviation. So that's more dangerous. If someone sits down and spouts absolute nonsense that we were all banana trees in our previous lives or something like that, someone will believe it, whatever you say. But we don't expect, although you never know in these days, we don't expect devotees to believe that. But then if someone speaks very, just like at the end of this class, if I say, and the real solution, just to boil it down to one very simple principle, is that all of you should just do exactly whatever I say without questioning, and then you'll control the mind very easily. Then you may say, well, the class was very good, it was very logical, according to Shastra, and then he gave some little secret which we didn't know before. And, okay, that makes it easy. All right, we'll just do whatever he says, without question, without thinking. And many devotees think like that, actually. They think, I should just... Even if the guru does something which is clearly outside the mandate of Srila Prabhupada, they think, well, he's a guru. But that disqualifies him immediately. More or less, I said these things a few years ago in a class in Zagreb, and that's why we have the Lika festival, actually. For saying these things, we had to have our own festival because it wasn't appreciated. Well, maybe the result was good. Hard to take, huh? Very hard to take. But we have to. We are servants of the undiluted truth. Truth can be difficult to accept. Sentiment must be there. We're not just hard gyanis, hard-hearted gyanis. But the sentiment, we should never let the sentiment be go independently or not be guided by truth as understood from Guru, Sadhu and Shastra. And Guru means who follows the previous acharyas. So that means the intelligence has to be awake. Never, if the intelligence is ever turned off, then immediately we're in trouble. That's all. Yeah, now there's a flood of questions. This will give rise to a flood of questions. Yeah, okay, what's your question? Just for your information, if you're interested, these kind of beads, which are made at Radha Kund, Prabhupada didn't like them. They're Babaji-type beads. We see many devotees, they have these. They have Radha or something written on them in Sanskrit. Just for your information, if you're interested. Prabhupada didn't like them. You probably never heard that before. You may not care, but if you care, I'm just letting you know. Even when the pure devotee does the most gross things, he should be? He should be respected. Yeah, but not necessarily that he's... If someone is deviating, it doesn't mean that you disrespect them, but it also doesn't mean that you follow them. You should know. Guru api avaliptasya kaya kaya majanataha utpanna pratipandasya parityago vidhiyate. Srila Prabhupada quotes this. Statement of Bhishma Dev. Prabhupada quotes this in the Bali Maharaj section of Srimad Bhagavatam. A statement by Bhishma Dev who fought his guru with weapons. Bhishma said that guru api, even if he is guru, even guru, we don't know the position of guru in Vedic culture, how much they are respected. Arjuna's dilemma, how can I fight my gurus? We have no idea what it means, because first of all, the position and acceptance of guru, not just this sentimental hogwash or whatever, but very great commitment. what is that? Atmasat. Bhaktivinoda Thakur uses that word. Just you're one with the Guru in desire. You are the property. You complete faith and trust. And Arjuna was totally committed to dharma. He never, all the Pandavas, they never wanted to do anything wrong in their whole life. Arjuna especially, very committed. So, Guru Api, even if he is a Guru, if he's not properly situated, if he doesn't know how to instruct properly, or even if he was good previously, but now is saying something wrong, Parityago, that means not just reject, completely, he should be completely rejected. That is the vidhiyate, that is the injunction. So it's very heavy. It's a heavy business, this Krishna consciousness. It's not just like this came in the hippie time in San Francisco. The hippies liked it. There was that song, if you ever go to San Francisco, what is that? Put some flowers in your hair, something like that. There was some song. People saying Hare Krishna, same thing, you know, some flowers, some bells, some incense. Vegetarian, but it's nice. But it's very, very heavy. Kshurasya dhara nishita duratyaya durgang patas tat kavayo vadanti. It's like a razor's edge, is one thing, and it's a difficult path to traverse. So, yeah, it's simple, but it's not easy. There you go. Not easy. Durgang patas. Quote from Shastra. It's a difficult path. Difficult path to cross. But if we have favorable winds and proper guru, then we can go. Otherwise, we're in trouble. So, this could go on all morning, but should we stop now? No! Popular consent. Yeah.
Connected with Teta Sevana Prabhu's question. For example, if somebody quotes his own guru.
Someone quotes my guru, yeah, this is a problem.
My guru said that and that, and for example, I don't agree with that, neither it said in Prabhupada's books. What's the proper.
What? How to settle this? Well, this is a problem. Then one guru says this and one guru says that. And we have to see what Prabhupada says. But sometimes. What Prabhupada says is interpretable also, because Prabhupada sometimes said different things under different circumstances. Or he sometimes said things, but he didn't enforce it. Just like Prabhupada, he made it clear he didn't like the chanting of Haribol, 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 on and on and on. But then sometimes he tolerated that. For whatever reason, maybe he didn't want to disturb the mood of the devotee, didn't think the devotee was ready to accept that instruction, or whatever. So then, what do we do? Someone may say, well, Prabhupada allowed it, and say he allowed it, and someone else will say, well, he allowed it, but he didn't like it. And actually, we should see what Prabhupada actually wanted, rather what he said, rather than what he allowed. But then, different people may interpret differently, and that's actually what happens with different gurus. Different gurus do instruct differently in details, as is stated by Rupa Goswami in the Nectar of Devotion. So how to accommodate that all within one worldwide movement? That just it becomes difficult to understand. Srila Prabhupada said that we should address all women as mother, but in the early days it appears he even personally addressed some as Prabhu, all the devotees were doing. So what should we do? Should we stick to the hippie days standards, where Prabhupada was really not bringing in many standards at all, or should we come to that which is followed by all shastras and acharyas and even normal people and what Prabhupada actually said to do in his books? Well, some people say, well, we should do what Prabhupada did in the early days. It was only later when all these sannyasis corrupted him that he became so strict about all these things. That's one interpretation. So people may interpret differently. Have a look. Look before you leap. Before you take a guru, look what you're getting. It is a principle to follow one's guru, and it does. You can get in trouble by offending your guru, even if he's on some minor point. You might be right, but then if you make a policy of arguing with your guru, that's also not right. So it's a very serious business, that one. And exactly how to accommodate different approaches within one worldwide institution is a challenge, no doubt. Some things are clearly deviant. I mean, Prabhupada, Nirvishesha Shunyavadi Paschatya Desha Charne, Srila Prabhupada came to deliver us from all the Mayavadis. So if we're promoting Mayavadis or speaking like Mayavadis ourselves, then it's clearly bogus. But it can be confusing. Mayavadis, some of them, they chant Hare Krishna also. And you may think, oh, they're devotees. But they're not. We should see all the symptoms before we come to a cheap conclusion. Yeah, okay. Then, ladies, there was one question, yeah.
I have three questions.
You have three questions. All right.
The last point, you said that everyone should be addressed as a mother. For years we did that. Everyone was addressed as a mother.
For years women were addressed as mothers within ISKCON.
Not only to be addressed as a mother, but to be looked at as...
They should be treated as mothers, yeah.
And a few years later, those same brahmacharis that called a person mother marry that same person and have sex with that person.
Yeah, and then the brahmachari who called one a mother married one of them. Does that mean that no one should ever get married? All women are to be addressed as mothers, and you can't marry your mother, so no one should ever get married. Is that the logic we're following?
Maybe it's not logical. Maybe we should divide them by categories of age, and the older ones should be called mothers, and I don't know.
The older ones should be called mothers. You don't know. Okay, I know. I know, because I know what Shastra states and what the tradition is. That all women except one's wife is to be addressed as mother. And even little girls, they're potential mothers. And traditionally one doesn't see in the wife until the marriage day. So in the girl in the same village, you won't marry. That's the tradition. It's a little different in the modern age. But if we say that because we address all women as mothers, therefore no one should get married, it's not a very practical proposal. The point is that calling them mother, we see them like that, and immediately from the very beginning of life, it helps them to imbibe that identity or that... role as mother. Anyway, I gave a three-part seminar called Women, Masters, or Mothers. It's in English. If you like, you can listen to it, and all these points are dealt with in detail, and I'm not going to deal with them again now, because it'll take it was like 6 hours total, so it's on the internet. You can look at it. Staunch feminists have been saved by listening to that, so I'm told. Just logical points, that's all. With the body of a woman comes a certain kind of mentality also. It's not just the physical body, but it. So every woman desires, it's just natural, they desire to be mothers, that's all. A very simple thing to it. It's a very strong tendency that goes, and everything develops from that. So anything else? You have another two questions? By the way, not calling women mothers doesn't solve the... If calling women mothers has been misused, it doesn't rectify the situation by calling them something else. It's the mentality that has to be changed, not the word. It's just like they used to call niggers. You all know what a nigger is, right? You all heard in Croatian you have also the word nigger. Yeah. And then they became more polite and said Negroes. And then they became more polite and said black. And why did they have to keep on changing? Because the same... They thought black, okay, that's not a pejorative term. But because the attitude was pejorative, you know what that means? It means like condemning. Then the word black, which just meant a color, came to be pejorative. Then it became colored... And now it's African American, and who knows, you know, it'll go on and on. They had spastics, and then they had physically handicapped. Now they have physically challenged. But you can't change the mentality by changing the words. It's a stupid idea. And I saw in America that instead of calling this person is short, they call them vertically challenged. I mean, how ridiculous can you get? Where is the end of all this madness? Whereas in India, you see, just someone, they don't have all this. If someone's he's a spastic, they don't have that mentality at all. They just understand, okay, he's born like that, that's his karma, and you know, get on with life, that's all. There's this whole mentality of laughing at someone because, well, it's there in Shastra also. Ashtavakra was laughed at by the Apsaras, but I don't find in modern Indian culture. One girl some time ago came to me, she's about, I don't know, 16 or something. And I asked her, she came walking, I said, oh, you hurt your leg or something? She said, no, I'm born like that. I have a malfunction in my leg. And it's not that anyone's expecting to say, oh, I'm so sorry. Oh, how terrible. You know, just, okay. She's like that. All right. So, it's all on the mental platform, all this stuff. Shastra says, address women as mother. Okay, bus finished. And treat them as mother. That's all. But instead, we try to change something, they have to change something else, and change something else. There's no end. Then you get caught by not following Shastra. According to Christian Bhagavad Gita, those who don't follow Shastra are demons. Because they act according to their own desire. They think they have a better idea. It's right there. Look at the end of the 16th chapter. I didn't make it up. As Prabhupada mentions in one purport, Pravritting Cha Nivritting Cha, look it up, chapter 16, text 9 it is, or 7, something like that. The demons do not know what is to be done or what is not to be done. In the purport, although it's not mentioned in the text, Prabhupada gives as an example that in the modern age, the demons, they want to give liberation to women and let them be independent. Oh, I don't like that. Prabhupada didn't really mean that. He was just being influenced by his Bengali background or by some nasty sannyasis. Of course, he didn't have any sannyasis at that time. Prabhupada saw it as a major aberration in modern society. But, unfortunately, in modern ISKCON, if we repeat what Prabhupada says in this regard, you're not supposed to say things like this. It's like socially taboo. Something's wrong there, isn't it? If we can't accept what Prabhupada said. Well, we accept the modern psychological idea. The whole history of the human race is one of torture of women. And the people, Manu was a great woman torturer, and Prabhupada was a great woman torturer. And now we have to reverse it, and now the women should torture the men. And that's what they say, right? Practically they say that. Now women have to be given their opportunity, and they're getting their back on the men for generations, and homosexuals were mistreated for centuries, and now they have to have their chance, and on and on and on. All madness, just simply. Modern society, if we don't realize that modern society is mad, then we are mad. Really. If you go in the madhouse and you think that these people are normal, then you're mad. And it is a madhouse. And even by their own statistics, it's a complete... You don't need statistics, just open your eyes, that's all. It's a disaster to think that these ideas of modern society... After so many years, we did all these studies and we discovered this, that, that actually women, they should be fighting in wars and holding machine guns and shooting people, and this is the last we've discovered what women need to be happy, and they should be airline pilots, and having children is a nuisance, and children, what is that, women having children, that's all that women want to do is have children, but instead they're training them up to be combat soldiers or something. It's just, everything's mad. I mean, my mother's dead now, but I wouldn't have sent her out to fight in a war. What about you? You like to see your daughter on the front lines with a machine gun going to fight? This is madness. Maybe some of you do. I don't know. And I think we'll finish there because the program is to go on. And if you don't like it, as I say,